Hey, welcome to Legal Marketing Radio from the Floor. I'm your host, Stephen Kent. Twice a month, we're bringing you the tips, strategies, resources, and the news and trends from the legal marketing world that you need to effectively market your law firm. This week, we've got LaFleur founder and president Chip LaFleur back on the podcast to go over what accelerated mobile pages, also called AMPs, mean for your firm's website. We'll also get some insights about on-page SEO from LaFleur content director Dave Vandewa. Before we get started, we just want to remind you that if you feel like you need a start-from-scratch primer on digital marketing strategy, one that's especially geared toward law firms, we have an incredibly information-rich and detailed ebook available on our website. It's called How to Develop a Scalable, Sustainable Digital Marketing Plan for Your Law Firm. To download it for free today, just visit lafleur.marketing/plan. That's lafleur.marketing/plan. Okay, let's get to the good stuff you're waiting for in this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. Okay, on the podcast this week, we actually have two returning guests. We have LaFleur content director, Dave Vandewa, once again. How's it going, Dave?
It's going well. Thanks.
Yep. And we have LaFleur president and founder, Chip LaFleur. Hey, Chip.
Hey, Stephen.
One of the things, the first topic that we want to talk about this week is actually kind of a technical issue we've been dealing with a little bit lately at LaFleur. And it's what's known as AMPs, which is, let's have you explain, Chip, what AMPs are and why they matter for and why we've kind of been dealing with them lately.
Well, first, like, they're horrible to talk about because you always want to say AMP pages.
Right.
And the whole AMP stands for Accelerated Mobile Pages.
ATM machine type.
Right, exactly. So if you say AMP pages, you're saying accelerated mobile pages.
Right.
And still, if you just say AMPs, people are like, well, are you in a band? What do you want to...
Right.
Yep. Electrician.
So I think from Google, it's the Accelerated Mobile Pages Project. So, but what it is it's a kind of cleaned up and stripped down version of a web page. And you communicate to Google exactly what the main meat of the content is that you want to disperse. Google takes that, puts it into their repository, and then serves that as a page, basically instead of your website. And it's only on mobile for the time being.
And people are seeing these now, right? This is when you Google something on your mobile phone, and you get that little top bar, and the URLs are all google.com, and you navigate there, and they have, like, the little lightning bolt logo next to them. So that's what an AMP page is.
Yep. So, yeah, exactly what you said. In search results, it's that little lightning bolt, and you see it, and sometimes it'll say AMP next to it. And you click it, and the load time is ridiculously fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's super, super quick. And so Google started rolling this out, I think, last summer. And, you know, Google's making a big, big push toward, you know, as they always have, user experience. And when people are on the mobile, they just want the information. You know, they don't want the coolest looking website. You know, they don't care. They just want to read the article. And so they made this push and said, hey, guys, we need you to deliver your content in this particular format. And then in exchange, we might help it show up a little higher in organic search, I guess, compared to someone who's not pushing it out in that format.
Got it. And so how do you make your website, you know, AMP compatible?
So it depends, of course, on the platform. We tend to build in WordPress, and WordPress provides some tools to help us to do that with relative simplicity. You know, of course, again, you're really serving like this separate website to Google to say, hey, this is the AMP version of my website. So it's almost like back in the olden days of mobile websites, right, where you had this domainname.com. Or you had domainname.com/article/mobile or something like that, where you had these parallel sites. It's kind of the same thing, except here we're just providing like the markup to Google to push that out. Now, through WordPress, we've got some plugins that we can use to make that a little easier. But then we still have to go in and we have to customize those plugins.
That makes sense. It's interesting. It's almost like you said, like going back, because, you know, for a long time, people have been, you know, the most cutting edge designers have been stressing responsive design. But then the AMP pages sort of seem to defeat the value of that in a little way almost.
Yeah, a little bit. I should say, let me qualify that. Like, kind of. And so right now, for the most part, we're not pushing full websites out through AMP. We're pushing out blog content specifically. And of course, we kind of look at that a case-by-case basis. Sometimes practice area pages are better served through AMP. AMP has a significant number of limitations too. And so what Google wants is a stripped-down version. Well, if you serve a stripped-down version, you know, there's a lot of things that we want to do that we can't strip down. So user tracking, things that tie into automation get stripped out of most of those pages. Call to actions usually get stripped out by default. You know, of course, tracking codes, things like that. Analytics actually gets stripped out by default. You know, again, there's a workaround there.
Well, that speaks back to our conversation last week where we talked about how it's so important to understand what's going on in analytics. And if you haven't integrated AMP into your analytics platform, then you're having trouble seeing how much traffic really is there and what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you implement AMP without being prepared completely right, you can kind of mess up your analytics too, which we had some experience with, and we had to figure this out as a company.
Yeah, so we tend to be quick to jump on changes in technology, of course, and we rolled out AMP, and all of a sudden we lost a bunch of traffic. Well, of course, Google is giving preference to the AMP pages to anybody that's on mobile, and AMP is stripping out what we use, which is Tag Manager, and so it doesn't serve Tag Manager. So now all of a sudden this web traffic is basically just disappears, and you can't recreate that data perfectly. You can go into your server logs and see some indication of what your traffic looks like, but that's not very accurate, and of course doesn't have the depth of information around Google Analytics. So there's a couple of ways to work around that. One is to create a separate Tag Manager instance specifically for AMP, set up analytics or whatever other tags you want in there within the AMP. Within the AMP world, right? So you're limited to what you can use there. Otherwise, a lot of platforms will have the ability to add analytics tracking code in there too. But the best practices way to do that actually is to set up a separate Tag Manager account if you're using Tag Manager. But even if you're not using Tag Manager, still set up a separate analytics account so the AMP traffic is going to show in a different property than your main website anyways. And then that presents some challenges too, because now you don't have this overview. Hey, here's how much traffic you've had. Instead, you have here's how much traffic you had in AMP, and here's how much traffic you had in your regular analytics. And so it requires a little more digging in. But for the time being,
is there an easy way to aggregate those back into one kind of picture, or is it just not that simple?
It's not that simple.
Okay. Okay. So how do you navigate that then?
You have to really look at them separately, and that might be why Google has done it that way, is because they really want you to think about them differently. Because people interact with content differently when they're on mobile than they do when they're on a desktop or a laptop or a tablet or something like that. And so, if you have a different mindset of how you use that information, you can start to do things with the user in mind and kind of put them first. And that's always a good idea, anyways. So, when we look at the analytics and we look at traffic patterns and things like that, of course, we still want to see, who's finding this page? And you find usually those results stay relatively in concert. If you have a high-performing blog post about a certain topic, that blog post probably is going to perform well in AMP as well as, desktop or tablet.
Got it. So big picture, though, are AMP pages something that most law firms need to consider with their website? If an attorney is resistant to this, and let's say they're thinking, my audience doesn't really use that much mobile, I don't need to deal with this, what would your answer be to that?
Everybody uses mobile, and, we continue to see mobile usage increase and oftentimes overshadow desktop use. And so if you're an attorney and you expect to get cases and have a good, provide a good impression to people, reflect your brand online, you really have to start using it to some degree. The catch-22 is you cannot use AMP and probably show up significantly less in organic search on mobile, or you can use AMP and work within the confines of AMP and show up in organic search. And when we first started rolling out AMP on our sites, the catch also was that AMP was so stripped down that you couldn't have some of the call to actions, there wasn't even a menu system that was easily installable, things like that. But we still opted towards doing it because you need to be there first, you know, and if you're not there, no one's going to interact with you. So if you don't have a good call to action, well, it doesn't matter. No one's going to see your site anyways. Now, as time has gone on, now we've got call to actions back. You know, we don't do this, but you could serve advertising through AMP again. We have menu systems built in. So we've now built out a lot of functionality that right out of the gate wasn't right there, you know. So now there's not much of a disadvantage to just being on an AMP page anyways. But you still need to take these things into consideration. The other challenge from the perspective of a business owner is the fact that really we just kind of doubled your website maintenance, not completely, but we created this secondary avenue. We didn't create it, we just have to adapt to it. There's a second avenue of this other site that needs to be maintained, and it really needs to be built and designed to some degree too, because if you don't do that, then you do get this, you know, even if you just roll out AMP, you strip out all this stuff, so you have to go in and rebuild all this stuff. And that's another round of testing and another round of everything that you do on a normal site.
I think attorneys, too, are always surprised at how much mobile traffic they get. You know, I'm in the analytics pretty frequently for our clients, and if it's not 50-50, it's weighted towards mobile pretty consistently. And lawyers live in a world that is almost feels 5 or 10 years behind where, you know, the general public is kind of going. And in a lot of ways, that's great.
Certainly where digital marketing is going.
Yeah, and yeah, especially in the world of digital marketing, where they're a little bit behind. And so you do see a little bit of a lag there, where there's mobile isn't as hot on the attorney's sites as it is on, say, our site.
But it's growing either way.
But it's growing. It's the inevitable course of where things are headed. So
the mobile pages, AMP pages, that is, or AMPs, if I want to be more proper, they're getting more robust. But either way, they're not going away, and there's something you're going to have to learn to negotiate with if you want to have a successful law firm website.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, for the second part of our podcast, we want to switch focus a little bit. We're actually going to devote the rest of our time this week to SEO. And actually, Dave wrote a pretty informative blog post on this on our website recently. So we want to feature some of the stuff that Dave did with that. But just to start out, I thought it might be useful to... I think SEO is a topic that a lot of attorneys, when they start working with their digital marketing agency, it's something that's on their to-do list, you know? Unlike a lot of things that we do, they actually have an idea of what it is. But I think also a lot of attorneys maybe have some kind of outdated notions about what SEO entails. So I thought maybe we could start out, you know, by talking, dispelling some SEO myths. And if any that you guys think of that you want to throw in, feel free. One that I'm thinking of just to start, I think a surprising amount of attorneys still think that SEO involves keyword stuffing or keyword spamming, which is, you know, basically trying to, and of course we don't do this because we know that it doesn't work, but I see it on plenty of attorney websites where they're just obviously trying to, in a blog post, for instance, just stuff as many versions of the same keyword, you know, Alaska domestic violence help or something like that, you know, into the blog post, like the location and the thing they want to harp on, the keyword. And they'll just try to repeat it, you know, in every sentence of the post. And also the other version that I see sometimes, which is kind of even more, you know, nakedly shameless, is the homepage that at the bottom just has a completely no connection to anything paragraph that's just a bunch of keywords. I've seen this a few times recently. Yeah. It always makes me laugh because I know exactly what they're trying to do. And this is a tactic that, you know, it did used to work maybe, what, like 10 years ago or so?
Yeah.
But it doesn't work anymore, right?
This is a lot like the people who put different skills in white font in their resume so that when they upload it to a job and the computer reads it, it thinks they have all these different qualifications.
I forgot about, you know, that trick.
This is something that, you know, just to get the interview. You know, and just for the exact same reason that strategy fails in a job search is the same reason that it fails in a search engine optimization context, right? Mm-hmm. You're promising something that you're not delivering. And when you're promising something you're not delivering, then Google is getting more and more sophisticated at sussing that out. They make constant updates to their algorithms to get that trash and not serve that up to people because they know it's not going to be helpful to the person.
Right, they knew it was creating bad content, you know? Right. I mean, it was bad for everyone. That this worked for a while, you know, and so the top pages were just these, you know, long lists of keywords that were no good to anybody, really.
Yeah, and you talk about keyword density too, keyword stuffing, and they've done numerous studies on keyword density that shows that it has no effect on there, on search position and things like that either. Whether it's stuffed with 99% saturation keywords or 1% saturation, and it doesn't have any real effect on where someone gets ranked.
Right. So just because you want to rank for construction accidents doesn't mean that you need to drop the phrase construction accidents, you know, 35 times in the post.
Like your content has not going to work. Yeah.
So, you know, that dream is dead. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
another myth that I want to mention is kind of a bigger myth. And we were kind of talking about this earlier, Dave. It's kind of the myth that SEO is its own service, right? Its own standalone service. So it's something that, you know, your ad agency should every month bill you for SEO. And that's not really how SEO works anymore in a bigger sense. Maybe you want to talk about that a little bit, since I know you wrote about that in your blog post, Dave?
Yeah. So I think there are certain contexts where billing SEO separately makes a little bit of sense. If you're making specific optimizations to specific pages, like say you're going to update the metadata on X number of pages, I think you can bill SEO separately for something along those lines. Or maybe you're making technical optimizations. That seems to make sense to bill SEO separately. But because there's so much overlap in SEO and user experience and a lot of the other digital strategies that you're working on, it doesn't make sense to not think about SEO in all the things that you do, whether that's managing your social media or working on your email marketing strategy or writing your content. All those things need to factor in SEO. And if you're not thinking about SEO in those contexts, you're doing yourself a disservice, I think.
So moving away from, you know, some of these myths that we're debunking, what are the things that work? I know we talk a lot about, you know, it's amazing how many websites that we see that aren't doing the fundamental things that can really help your SEO in a really rapid fashion. You know, you can improve it quickly. Can you talk about what some of those things are and how, you know, you can address them quickly if you really want to boost your SEO?
Yeah, definitely. The sort of low-hanging fruit of SEO are the things that you can do in the next 5 or 15 minutes that would improve the search accessibility and understanding of your page. And it is, like you said, it's shocking how many people get even the fundamentals wrong. And I'm thinking here of specifically of on-page SEO as being separate from, you know, the more site-wide SEO that you do or off-site SEO. And on-page, obviously the most important ranking factor in all things is the content that's on the page. And so you have to start with good content. And so assuming that you're working with good content, you want to make sure that it can be found in search. You know, this involves getting your site up and running and submitting a sitemap to Google so that they can crawl it and find it, and making sure that all the pages can be found. And again, you sort of have to assume that those things are all done. And once you do, you want to look at the real fundamental basics on every single page. You want to look at the title tag, make sure that's optimized. You want to look at the H1 tag, make sure that's optimized. Although your meta description is not a ranking factor anymore, you do want to look at your meta description because it can affect your click-through rates and can affect how people perceive the page when it showed up in search results. So you got your title that shows up in search results, but your meta description also shows up. So
right, the meta description is that little paragraph in the search bar, right? Underneath, you know, the page title comes up, mm-hmm. and then the meta description. And, you know, I think probably some attorneys think that the meta description is just automatically pulled from the page content, but you can actually set a meta description so that the description reads what you want it to say.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, Google will sometimes, depending on your query, the user's query, what they type in the search bar, depending on what people type in, Google may just disregard your meta description anyway and create one. That's a lot of times what you'll see when you see a lot of dot, dot, dots in your meta description. Mm-hmm. It's where Google has pulled content from the page that includes your keyword so that it lines up a little more closely with the query that you typed in. But more often than not, Google will honor your request to display your specific meta description. And so you do want to optimize that. You want to think about the text there, and you want to make it enticing for people to click through. And then beyond that, on the page, you want to look at your other heading tags, your H2s, your H3s. They do still factor in. And you want to think about keywords, but you want to avoid those myths or you know, getting really hung up on keywords. You want to make the text natural because, again, it's the content on the page that is your number one ranking factor. And so if you make that content really good, you make that content really natural, then it's just about telling Google, this is what my page is about in the title tag and the H1 and meta description and those. So
you make a good point, though, that you know, you don't want to go too far the other way and neglect the keywords that you're trying to rank for completely. Right. You know, without naming any names, we have a client that we recently signed that's, you know, one of the factors that I really noticed when I looked through their website copy was that they had almost no actual iterations in the text of their location, you know. And so sure enough, you know, when you were looking location-specific searches for their practice, they're really hard to find. You know, you can't assume that Google is, you know, so smart that it'll be able to figure out, you know, what you're trying to talk about or, you know, your location, something as fundamental as that, simply from context. You know, so you have to, you know, during your copy, you still have to, you know, state the things that you want people to hear, that you want Google to think your site is about. But you don't need to, like, you know, overstuff and try to work those phrases into every sentence.
Right.
I think there's just a couple of other things, too, that we could take a look at. One is, like, alt tags for images, you know, definitely. Go through and make sure that we have good alt tags. Structure of your content, you know.
Can you explain what alt tags are for images in case the attorneys don't know?
So alt tags are going to be the tags that are attached to the images on your site. They're actually originally designed to help visually impaired people be able to browse the internet so that if they can't see what's there, maybe they're using a reader and it's reading it to them.
It's that little text when you hover over an image, right, with your mouse cursor? That
No, actually, that's a title tag.
Ah, right. Yeah, okay, yep.
So title tag on an image is going to be the hover.
That's right.
Pop-up. But then the alt tag is, you're never really going to see the alt tag unless you look at the code. Or if you're visually impaired, then, of course, you know, you're using a reader. It's going to read the content of the page. But then you lose the images that are with the article. Mm-hmm. And so if you have an alt tag, then it can read that, too. So that helps. Site structure is a big one, too. And you can rearrange your site structure even after your page is live, after your site's live, as long as you do a good job doing what are called 301 redirects. And 301 redirects are... It's just a code that you send to Google, and you say, this page used to live here, now it lives here, and it's moved permanently. So you can make changes to your site structure. You just want to make sure that you do it right by redirecting people that used to go to this place to this place. So we really always kind of want to see, to the extent that it's appropriate, we want to see like this upside-down tree almost, where at the top you have kind of the main thing that you want to focus on and really try to rank for. And then supporting spokes under that might be categories. Supporting spokes under that are going to be the individual articles, you know, that are going to be more and more specific as you go down. And so all those pages support the pages above. And then internal linking from one page to the other on the site. We try to do that with most of our posts. If you're talking about traumatic brain injury, and then you have a page or practice area that's specifically about traumatic brain injury, if you can do have some linking structure there. And that's one area where I might... Where it might differ in terms of saying, you know, is can SEO be something that you build for, you know, specifically? My difference on that point is not really related to most of the clients that we work with. Bigger entities are going to want to take a look at, you know, what is your inbound linking structure look like? Who's pointing to your website? And you want to see kind of the right ratio of different types of sites. For most of our clients, though, you know, what Dave's saying makes absolute sense because... If you don't have that foundational stuff, which is great content first and foremost, you know, good structure, you know, the basics done right on your website, then you shouldn't be spending money on doing things off-site to try to prop up the content that's not strong enough. If you have all those other things, then sure, go and do off-site SEO, do link building, you know, do things like that. If you have the budget to do that, but... you know, generally speaking, I try to kind of herd people into the idea of, you know, focus first on delivering really good content, because if you do that, then we can start doing those other things later. And usually, you know, with the budgets that are available for most firms, you probably can't do both, you know, and really your priority should always be on the quality of content. So focus on that first. If you're producing a lot of content and it's really good, and you're looking to kind of move to the next level, then sure, start looking at some of these more off-site things that are out of your control. The things that are in your control, of course, are more predictable. You know, building out your social media that link back to you, building out YouTube that links back to you, you know, making sure Avvo has a link to you, you know, things like that.
Yeah, SEO is definitely something that you want to get the foundation right. And if you get the foundation right, a lot of those things will naturally follow. If you have really great content and it gets found and it starts ranking in search, people are going to share that. You're going to get links to your site sort of naturally. What you can do is you can inject a little bit of, you know, steroids almost onto that, into that strategy by actively seeking out links. to your content. But you got to get, like you said, you got to get the foundations right first.
Right, doing that without without good content is like steroids without working out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I put on mass, but it's not going to be good. Yeah. Not going to be any good kinds. Yeah. So one other thing I want to discuss in terms of SEO is something you hit on your blog post too. You talked a lot about long tail keywords and the value of those. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and how you can kind of use long tail keywords to shape your content in a more meaningful way?
Sure. So when you think of keywords and you look at the volume of traffic that is associated with different keywords in search, what you'll see is that about 30% of traffic on Google goes through what we call head terms. You know, you think of like a brontosaurus, right? Or maybe more of an alligator, I guess would be a better metaphor. And so these head terms are at the front, and that's why we call them head terms. And they're short. You might think of, in the legal context, you might think personal injury is a head term. It's a pretty short little keyword phrase, and it's a very broad keyword phrase. And you think, man, I really want to rank for personal injury. But only about 30% of traffic goes through these big, broad keywords. And people who are searching for personal injury might not be looking for a personal injury lawyer. And so you have to think, too, about your keyword strategy in relation to, you know, well, what is it that I really, what are the people I want to bring to my site? And so long tail keywords are these very long and often unpredictable phrases. Some of them you might be able to predict. Like you might be able to predict something like, you know, Chicago, Illinois, personal injury attorney. That's sort of a long phrase that's pretty nuanced and specific, and that might be something that you try and target. But 70% of traffic on the internet comes from these long tail keywords. And it might be a question. You know, what do I do after I've been injured in a car accident? You know, these huge long phrases. And these long tail keywords are what bring people to your site. And while you can sort of strategize around them and predict them to some degree, a lot of it comes naturally from the great content that you write. So the more you focus on your content and comprehensively covering topics on your blog or on your core website pages, the more of that long tail keyword traffic you're going to draw in, because your site's ranking for a lot of different terms that occur naturally and phrases that occur naturally in your content.
And one of the bonuses, right, of long-tail keyword traffic is that, you know, due to the higher degree of specificity to these keywords, a lot of times the traffic you get is going to be more meaningful, right? You're going to more likely get people that are actually searching for exactly the topic that you're talking about.
Right. And there's sometimes less competition in the ad space as well. So you might notice this in Google if you're sort of a conscientious Google user. You'll see that when you do these broad terms or even the very predictable long tail terms like, you know, Chicago personal injury attorney, you're going to see ads, you know, ads. You're going to see your local box show up with the map and who's on the map and everything else. And so you got a lot of material way above your organic results and you're competing with that. In long tail keywords, you might not even see any ads, or you might see less ads. You might only see two ads. You might not see the whole map and box with the three pack and everything else. And so if you can optimize for these long tail keywords, you're going to have a lot less competition. You might be the top result in Google, and you might be at the top of the page even, versus having to scroll down. You know, because being number one in Google for personal injury attorney is great, but you still have to scroll down to get to the organic search results.
Right, and for that term, no one's really number one.
Yeah, right.
Not organically, anyway.
Yeah, there are no winners in that scenario, yeah.
Okay, well, we hope these tips will get your SEO up and flying in no time. We want to thank Dave again for coming on the podcast, and Chip, thank you for coming in as well. Thanks so much.
Thanks, it's been great.
Okay, that's it for this week's episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a special roundtable episode that will bring in more of the LeFleur team for an in-depth discussion about some of the challenges that are facing the legal marketing industry in 2017. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. And as always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just email radio@lefleur.marketing. See you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LeFleur.